From Last Out Media Studios, this is In the Zone with Deremy Dove and Jose Ruiz.
Welcome to In the Zone with Deremy and Jose. I'm Deremy Dove, and I'm joined by my co-host, my tag team partner, the Broad Street Bully himself, the one and only Jose Ruiz. What's going on, man?
Deremy Dove, what's going on, my brother? How you doing, man?
Hey, man, I'm doing great. I'm doing great. It's crazy that, you know, we're teasing it out, but will be the last time saying In the Zone with Deremy and Jose.
Yeah, man, it's kind of surreal a little bit, you know. I'm going to miss the name, but again, we've been talking about expanding and getting bigger. We definitely, you know, joining Last Out Media. You know, this has been in the works for a couple of weeks now, and we're very excited about the news.
Yeah, so you guys stay tuned, because next week, we're bi-weekly, but next week we'll throw out like a little mini episode explaining and we'll be revealing the name change and then also explaining why we did the change. So stay tuned for that. But for this episode, Jose, is something that so many people say, and I think it's taken for granted, but just how special and how amazing the Stanley Cup playoffs are.
It's the best playoffs in any sport, in my opinion. You know, I just, from all the tradition that goes into the playoffs, from the beards and just the difference in play. And we hear about basketball playoffs, which are great as well.
Yeah.
The NBA playoffs are awesome. I know NBA playoffs, all about adjustments, things like that. Most playoffs are, but when it comes to the hockey playoffs, NHL playoffs, there's nothing better than that.
I have to agree, man. And I feel like people say it, but it doesn't get that recognition that like it should, because it doesn't disappoint every year. It's special. And so we've done hockey episodes, but we wanted to do a special one, you know, this week. And we're looking at that classic Red Wings Avalanche rivalry. And Jose, this rivalry that not only defined an era, but really kind of changed how the NHL is played today.
Absolutely. These are two of the best teams I've ever seen, you know, just from top to bottom, from top scorer to coach to goalie to whatever, whoever else is on the team. These are two great, great organizations at this point. I mean, you got to think about it. The Red Wings, our original six team. They're a great organization, right, as well. The Avs made the move. We'll definitely get into all of that. But yeah, two great teams meeting head to head for several years.
Yeah. So I didn't ask you this, but when this rivalry was happening, did you prefer one team or another, just strictly as a fan? I know you're a Flyers fan, but
yeah,
did you like, were you pulling for one over the other kind of?
Well, I was a big Forsberg fan. You know, I just loved his game. He was just a complete player, but so was Federer. So I was always like, you know, I wasn't torn because I didn't really care who won these games, but I don't know. I just thought I was more on like the Avs side just because of Forsberg. Sakic's a great player. They just, you know, Detroit had a lot of great players as well, but they were like a little on their older side. Some of them, you can just see this Colorado Avalanche team just coming. You know what I mean? It was just built and it was ready to go.
So we're looking at the Red Wings Avalanche rivalry, but we're going to be focusing, because this rivalry really went from like 96 to about 02.
Yeah.
But we're going to be focusing on that 96 conference finals, game six, and then that follow up in the 97 season, fight night at the Joe. So that's what we're really going to be highlighting on this episode. And Jose, it's interesting because, you know, we look at the Red Wings and like you said, they're an original six team, but they had a good run of bad hockey throughout like the 70s and into the 80s.
Yeah.
And we kind of start seeing, you know, they bring in a GM, Jim Devolano, who was a big part of building that New York Islanders dynasty in the early 80s.
Yeah.
So one thing I remember hearing him say was that even though it's an original six team, he kind of looked at how bad the hockey team was for Detroit and was like, I have to think of this as an expansion job. And that kind of proved to be helpful, that he helped build an expansion team with the Islanders. And then he had to do that here in Detroit.
Yeah. I mean, he was also one of these GMs who wanted to build through the draft. And that was another big thing that he talked about. I want to build this team through the draft. The only worry he had was if ownership was going to let him do that and be patient enough to let him do that. And at this time, this era of sports, a lot of owners were. It's not like today's game where it's like you got to win in a couple of years or that's right, it, you're gone. So luckily for him, you know, he came on right on board at a good time and he definitely did an amazing job.
Well, he started to build the Red Wings up in the 80s, you know, getting guys like Adam Oates, the late, great Bob Probert. But his first draft pick was, you know, outside of Gordie Howe, Mr. Red Wing, Steve Yzerman.
Yeah, and as a GM, ownership, whatever, front office, you got to hit on these draft picks, you know, and he definitely hit a home run, Hall of Fame player in Yzerman with his first pick in the first round.
And now, it's interesting because Steve Yzerman, like you said, Hall of Famer, great player, great executive right now.
Yep.
But, you know, he gets drafted in 83. He's a part of this rivalry, but he's not the focal point, you know, because this rivalry takes off in 96, whether this is probably a decade earlier, Steve Yzerman is that focal point. But now at this time, he's still a great player. Don't get me wrong, but he's not like one of those main guys in this rivalry.
Yeah. And also from like a hockey, and I know how great Yzerman was. I know, you know how great he was. All NHL fans know how great this guy was, but I can remember at this time, like for me, and we talked about this, like for me, he was not like the first name that I thought about with this Red Wings team. Like he was maybe second or third. Don't get me wrong. Like I knew he was an all time great, but he was not at this point in time. He was not real like as flashy as some of these other guys we're going to get into. But he was a great player. But to me, again, it's just weird. And looking at this episode and doing some research, and it just kept hitting me over and over, like just going back at this time when I was definitely really into hockey and just thinking, wow, like he wasn't like the first name I thought of when you went to, when I thought about Detroit.
Yeah. Because, I mean, he plays for so long, but at that point, it's what, year 13 for him, you know, when we look at like the conference finals for the Red Wings and Avalanche in 96.
And in fairness also, in hockey years, it's a little different in hockey. Like guys can play till like 42 years old, like Chelios, guys like that. So
Jágr.
Jágr's still playing. He's like 60. So if you hear that, like you'll hear us run off some names and how long they've been playing in the league. But also hockey, like I said, it's a little different.
True. Good point. But it's, you look at when we got to the late 80s, Jim Devolano, and I think it's really huge, like that he was, that they had hired a GM who thought outside the box.
Yeah.
They didn't look at it like, well, we're an original six team, because he kind of said to his scouting team that we're going to have to look overseas and look to Europe and look to Russia, look to the USSR. And, you know, we're in 89 and that Cold War, it's coming to an end, but it's still there. That wall is still there. Yeah. And, It took a lot of risk taking, a lot of espionage, a lot of tricks to kind of scout and then get some of these Russian players over here to Detroit.
Yeah, and that was one of his first things. He said it. He was, you know, he said there was some great talent, you know, in Russia, and he was saying I saw an interview with him, you know, I think it was the Russian Five documentary, and he was asking his scouts who was the best 18-year-old in the world. And at that point, it was, you know, Sergei Fedorov. And that's all the scouts kept talking about. But again, the part was having them come over to the United States was the tough part.
And that's the first player of the, you know, you'll hear the Russian Five that gets drafted. It's Sergei Fedorov. And Jose had mentioned it, you know, back and forth between Forsberg and Fedorov. I love Sergei Fedorov.
He was great.
And for this Red Wings team, he's the first name I think of. It goes right to Sergei Fedorov for me.
Yeah, at this time, yeah, me too. Like, that's the guy for me. I can remember playing NHL, like, 95, and he was, like, 90 speed, 90 shot. He was just an all-around great player. And that's how I started noticing some of these Detroit players, like Yzerman and Cicerelli, who will come up in a little bit. But, yeah, he was one of those all-time great players. And not just he was fast, he can shoot, but he was also really good defensively. Yeah, he was just an all-around amazing player.
So they take, in the fourth round, you get Sergei. 11th round, you get his Soviet teammate, Vladimir Konstantinov.
Great pick.
Great pick there. They also, you know, in this draft, they get Lindstrom.
An amazing pick.
So, you know, this is all the 89 draft. And for those who don't know, they were looking at drafting another player from the Soviet Union, but the NHL said, I'm not sure.
You're getting out of hand.
This is kind of risky. Let's reel it in here. So then they wound up not drafting, and then Vancouver took this player, and that's Pavel Bure. So like that's.
And before Ovechkin came along, me personally, he was the best pure goal scorer I've ever seen in Bure. Like to me, he was just so dynamic. Another one, you talk about speed and just I mean, he wasn't as good defensively as Fedorov, but offensively, man, he was amazing, amazing player. So again, before Ovechkin came along, this was my guy. I think Ovechkin kind of took that over.
How crazy would it have been if they would have had all these guys?
I know.
On that team. You
wouldn't
know what I mean?
Fair. Yeah. It's not fair.
That's like the equivalent of like the 74 Steelers draft when they have five Hall of Famers.
Yep.
That's kind of like what they're pulling off here. They still had an all-time draft without him, but without some politics involved, they get Bure as well. And that's just...
And that's, again, going back to Devolano, like thinking outside the box. And I mean, if you look at the one, you know, non-trouble starting pick that he had was Nicholas Lidstrom. And he was, to me, he was one of the best defensemen of all time.
Yeah, he's up there.
You know, and it's just home run after home run after home run. And again, if you want to build a team from where he was building from, you got to have drafts like this.
No, it shows how important scouting is and just picking the right people in the draft. Not like Jimmy Johnson says, it's not how many picks you have, it's who you pick with those picks.
Yep.
And Devolano on the Red Wings did a great job. But then it continues. And Jose, tell us more about like who else, like, you know, complete that. Could we have Fedorov and Konstantinov, and we'll get into kind of how they had to come over here a little bit, but who else makes up that Russian five?
Yeah, so at 92, Kozlov comes over, he defects. They draft him, and you know, it was another like scam and scheme how they got him over, which was an amazing, they did an amazing job with that.
Yeah.
So that was in 92. 94, you know, they trade for Fetisov, who was a defenseman who played with the New Jersey Devils. They brought him over. They made the team one. He was a great defenseman. He was an all-time great defenseman, especially in Russia. But it just solidified that back end for them. He was just like a smart player. Just he just knew what he had to do. And then 95-96, the Red Wings lose to San Jose in a big upset.
Yeah.
You know, Red Wings were the top seed. San Jose was the A seed. San Jose beats them. And during that series, you got Igor Larionov, who was probably the best player on the ice. And Scotty Bowman kind of was doing the math and was saying, like, with this Russian team, he wanted a five-man unit. You know, so he was, you know, talking up and talking to the GM and wanting them to make a move for Larionov. And the GM, later on, I'll let you get into the trade, but he was thinking he was crazy, but definitely paid off.
Well, yeah, because they made that trade and they gave up, you know, Ray Shepard, who was a great goal scorer. And I kind of wanted to ask you this because I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong here, but that kind of seems like still keeps happening in hockey. When you trade away that goal scorer, people kind of just automatically, that knee-jerk reaction is, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, instead of like looking at the whole picture, but it seems like it's a constant thing of when you're trading that goal scorer. And even though in the documentary, Jim Devolano said that Scotty Bowman's like, we haven't won with Ray Shepard, you know, like we haven't gotten it done with him.
Great quote.
But it's like, it seems like that is a constant in hockey, at least for me, that goal scorer going, everyone kind of just, oh no, instead of looking at the whole picture of what that piece is.
Well, then also, in fairness, like looking at the other side, like Larionov was not a young guy.
He wasn't.
You know, so it's like you're trading away this goal scorer who's like still in his prime, you know, and Ray Shepard, and he's putting up numbers and he's been consistently close to your best player, you know, and now you're trading him away for this older Russian guy. You know, what is he going to bring that, you know, that Shepard couldn't bring? So it wasn't like, this trade was not taken very well by like Detroit fans and stuff. So, but I don't blame him. I mean, but then again, it definitely pays off.
It does. So then making that deal and you have the five together.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always kind of wanted to ask you, because we know that there's a difference between how North America have been playing hockey to how Russia have been playing hockey. And, you know, the importance of the, you know, Russian five is how they kind of went away from just that dump it down there kind of game style. And really that puck handling skill was amazing. But to me, I don't get it. Maybe you can help me with this. The Russians have been dominating hockey for so long. We know the Miracle on Ice and all the gold medals. Why did it take until the 90s with the Russian Five for the NHL to kind of adapt and get away from that style that they've been playing in North America for all these years when we couldn't beat them for the most part in the Olympic Games all these years?
Yeah, and at this time in the NHL, the trend was bigger, stronger, like, we're going to put you through the wall type of trend. Like, if you look at a lot of these teams who were successful, you look at the Jersey Devils, a lot of big guys, very physical team, defensive-minded team. You look at the Flyers with Lindros and the Legion of Doom, like, it was all a lot of big guys. Like, that was more of the trend. You know what I mean? You had guys like Keith Tkachuk, like, Brett Hall was another big guy. Like, you know, there was a lot of really big players, real power forwards. That was, like, a trend in the NHL at this point in time. And, you know, it was more about dumping, like you said, dump and chase. And, you know, get on that forecheck, create turnovers, boom. That's how we're going to get offense. And what this Russian Five team did, well, what the Red Wings did with the Russian Five, it was, but what the Rush, and I'm not a hockey expert here. Like, I'm not. But what they do is with the Russians and a lot of European teams, it's more about puck possession, you know? So, and there's a lot of great quotes in the documentary, the Russian Five, when, you know, some of the Russian players were saying, look, we have the puck. We worked hard for this puck. Why would we want to just dump it in and give it away again? Right. You know, which makes complete sense to me, you know? So what they did, it was, again, you have a 5-man unit who was consistently like passing. It was like a lot of short passes. Like, just, it was just beautiful to watch, to mm-hmm. be honest with you. And as a defensive player playing against them, would you want to chase a puck for 40 seconds? No, because you're going to be exhausted. So a lot of times they'll have you chasing around, and next thing you know, boom, is one pass breakaway. And a lot of guys was, you know, these guys were scoring a lot that way. So it took the league by storm, because again, at this time, the league was just big and bad. Again, we'll get into like some of the teams that the Red Wing teams beat, especially the Flyers, but it was just, they had no speed to match them, and they paid the price for that.
No, absolutely. And a brilliant thing to this was Scotty Bowman, the coach of the Red Wings, he didn't just always put the five out there. He picked and choose when to use the Russian Five as a unit. And Jose, I wanted to talk to you about Scotty Bowman, because this is someone who is universally, you don't really hear any debate when it comes to greatest coach in NHL. Now, with other sports, NBA, it's like, is it Phil Jackson? Is it, you know, Red Auerbach, Pat Riley? You know, Coach K just announced it's his last season. People say him or John Wooden or Dean Smith. The NHL, and there's great coaches, you know, Al Arbor and, you know, Glenn Sather, but Scotty Bowman is usually, it's like, he's the greatest coach, next topic. Yeah. And I wanted you to talk about why is that, and why is Scotty Bowman really the GOAT when it comes to head coaches?
I mean, because in my opinion, like, you'll hear about all these great coaches who sometimes do go to different places, right? Let's just say like a Phil Jackson, right? Like, or, you know, Pat Riley, they go to a couple different teams, but they consistently still win, right? And it's like, anywhere Scotty Bowman went, the team was all, they were a great team. You know, we look at, you know, Chicago, St. Louis, Montreal, where he won like a million Stanley Cups.
Yeah.
You know, he went to Pittsburgh and won. And obviously he went to Detroit and won a lot of games and won Stanley Cups. So for me, it's like wherever he went, no matter what the personnel was, if he was making that adjustment or they were adjusting to his system, and then, you know, he made them a better team. So that for me is like the epitome of a great coach. Like, no matter where you go, who your players are, you're going to win. And that's exactly what Scotty Bowman did.
You know, having 6 cups before he gets to Detroit.
Yeah.
He kind of already, and yeah, I was telling you this the other day, that when the Red Wings, and we'll get to this, when they're playing the Flyers in 97, my dad said this to me, like, we got to go to a place to see the cup right before game one. They had the cup on display, and it was really awesome to see it. And my dad said, he's like, well, Detroit has the greatest coach of all time. Like, he was already considered that before what he wound up doing with the Red Wings, which is impressive to me. Like, this just kind of was like icing on the cake, what he did in Detroit. He was already like GOAT status then.
Yeah, he didn't have to do that. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't have to come in and win 3 more cups and then skate away that way, but he did. And again, kudos to him. Even with this Detroit team, how this Detroit team kind of evolved and changed throughout his tenure there. It's just, man, the man's an amazing hockey mind, man. It's just, again, something else that's really, really fun to watch.
So I just want to make sure, though, for you, greatest coach of all time?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just wanted to know, you had like a little hot take there.
No. Not with that. Like you said, this is no like debate here.
No, but, you know, and you're right. After that embarrassing loss in 94 in the first round, this team winds up next year, 94-95, having a great season and getting all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. But then they found out with those Devils, wind up getting swept. Yeah. Ugly.
It was ugly. I mean, they won 62 games, 131 points, you know, two NHL records at that point. And it was just an amazing, amazing season. So then what this started to do was it almost became like a trend. But then also they started getting that and that quote unquote, like soft, like team, like image or, you know, reputation that is, again, we've talked about it in previous shows. That's really hard to shake. But also they were proving everybody right with that.
I was going to say, was it not justified?
Yeah. I mean,
And
then again, like you had a lot of fans, a lot of players in the NHL who were
Don Cherry.
Oh, don't get me started on Don Cherry. But yeah, like a lot of people like that who were really against Detroit bringing all these European players over. It was a Canadian game, a North American game, you know, and this was feeding that monster. You know what I mean? Like, so when they ran into the Devils, who were a good team, we're a great team. I don't even know where to put that at, like good or great. I don't know. But they were they were defensively an amazing
I call team. The Devils of that era a great team.
They were a great team. I'm just hating on them.
Yeah.
they were a great team, and they just ran into that, you know. And again, like this Detroit team was not prepared and not ready for that trap and all that defensive prowess that New Jersey was coming in with. Scott Stevens was laying dudes out. Like, he laid out Kozlov and put him to sleep. Like, it was New Jersey was ready for them, and Detroit was not. And even coming in, and again, that's another letdown. So you go from that Sandals from the one seed losing to an A seed, and any playoffs is a big thing.
Upset.
So now the following season, you have an amazing all-time season, and again, can't get over that hump. That's hard to shake as a team.
No, absolutely. And that's kind of where I was. I'm glad you brought it up, because it's like, you know, there was a lot of bias because we, and, you know, for those who don't, you know, we can't hopefully we can get him on the show, but Keith Gave, who the Detroit Free Press wrote the book on the Russian Five, was a big part of that documentary.
Yeah.
Was actually the Red Wings used him because he could actually speak Russian and kind of tried. He went over there to kind of give the messages to Fedorov and Konstantinov about coming over, and, you know, great stories all with that. And, you know, this is the Cold War. So yeah, it's a big deal.
And that had to be scary stuff.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah.
Very scary. So, you know, there's a lot of bias as that political rivalry and stigma. But then again, it kind of was proving out to be right. And we, you know, there's the history of like the summit series in the 70s with Canada and Russia and how they kind of roughed up Russian players back then. So that kind of stuck to it. And then a lot of guys were also fearful if you bring over these Russian players, you're going to lose jobs. So they were coming into a lot of adversity, not just with the language barrier, but just with people's stigmas and prejudices too.
Yeah. And even going back to Fedorov, when he came over, Detroit knew how great of a player he was as an organization. The organization was showing him a lot of love. They were paying him some money. They were giving him, they gave him that red Corvette. You know, he was all around town. Players on the team were a little jealous of that. And why is this guy getting all the attention? And again, you talked about the language barrier. He was there by himself, like learning a language and trying to like be in that fellowship, that camaraderie of a team in the locker room. That has to be extremely tough. That's why when Constantino came over, it was like, oh shit, like now I got a guy with me where I can just sit here and just like chop it up with. So it was, that had to be, as a player, that has to be a difficult transition.
Absolutely. For sure. And you know, it's a two-sided battle here in this rivalry. So we got to look at
absolutely
the Colorado Avalanche, but 95-96 was their first year being Colorado. We got to take it back. And I know, check our archives of, you know, Jose loves these jerseys.
Yeah. The
Quebec Nordiques.
Absolutely. Best jerseys of all time, man.
Incorrect. But they were the Quebec Nordiques. And for those, you know, you could check our archives on this episode when we had Mr. Martinez come on and talk about Eric Lindros and how he was with Philly. You know, we look at around like, you know, in the early 90s, so I think it was 91 or 92 draft.
91 entry draft.
Yeah. So then Quebec had drafted Eric Lindros, and Quebec was struggling as a franchise at this point, just with money and just a lot of things. It wasn't looking good for this team, but they take this guy, Eric Lindros, this superstar. He's the next big thing. I guess, Jose, if I'm off, let me know, but the way people talk about Zion, like when he was coming out, like that's what I remember. Like that's what Lindros had. He was going to change hockey. We hadn't seen a guy this big, strong, fast, and talented before. The only problem is the Lindros family said, nah, Eric's not going to Quebec.
Yeah, this was the equivalent of like Shaq. Mm-hmm. That's how it was put to me, and that's what got me involved in hockey. It was just like you see what Shaq is doing in the NBA, and obviously he's taking over the league. Now we got the equivalent of the hockey Shaq and Eric Lindros. And then, like you said, he comes over, he gets drafted. He was not happy he was drafted by Quebec. And, you know, he talks about it. He talks about not wanting to play for the owner, and which was a really big deal at this time in hockey. And, you know, we always can like equate it to like Eli Manning and John Elway. But in the NHL, for a Canadian player not wanting to go to a Canadian team was huge. And, you know, Lindros let it be known.
I think with time after, I mean, my wife's French, I have property in Quebec. I guess I just didn't explain properly enough that I did not want to play for that particular owner as clear as I should have. And I didn't think I had to, but I was not going to play for that person. And I chose not to. And here we are. That's in the nutshell. It has nothing to do with culture. It has nothing to do with people of French people. This obviously it's a beautiful place, gorgeous here. But I was not going to play for that person and chose not to. My right to choose. It wasn't saying no to the people. It was saying no to one particular person who ran the team.
Absolutely. He definitely has the right to do that. And, you know, the owner was Marcel Aubin. I might be saying the name wrong. It's like a French Canadian name. I'm going to butcher it, but that was the thing. He did not want to play for this owner. And in this interview, you know, he was even asked if there was a different owner, would you would have played for Quebec? He said, absolutely. He said, absolutely. So you're exactly right. We can't talk about this Avalanche team without talking about this trade. And again, we're not here to talk about Lindros. We're not here to talk about the Flyers, but this trade was huge in the building of that team.
Yeah, because this is probably the equivalent of the Herschel Walker trade in football.
Absolutely.
You know, and it has notoriety. I think it gets compared to it a little too much there because the Herschel Walker trade was clearly one-sided.
Yeah.
You know, where to me this trade is, you know, could look at the Herschel Walker deal. You know, the Herschel Walker deal happens. The Cowboys get those picks, win those Super Bowls. But if Herschel Walker would have had a Hall of Fame running back career with the Vikings, then we don't slam it as much,
yeah.
You know, where he didn't with Herschel Walker, but Lindros was a Hall of Fame player. But the, you know, at the time, Quebec Nordiques, and then they would be the Colorado Avalanche, wind up building this dynasty. Big part of it is through this trade. And the big centerpiece is someone we had mentioned earlier, Peter Forsberg.
Yeah, this trade, I mean, again, if you don't know what the trade is, you know, you can always look it up. But real quick, it's you know, Quebec obviously traded the rights to Lindros. You know, Quebec gets Steve Duchesne, Peter Forsberg, Ron Hextall, Kerry Huffman, Mike Ricci, Chris Simon, the Flyers' first round pick in 93, Flyers' first round pick in 94, and $15 million.
Yep.
And we're talking about 1991, where the highest paid player in the NHL was Wayne Gretzky, obviously, making $3 million a year.
Yeah.
So this $15 million was also a huge deal, you know, but not only what they... Because what Quebec also did with some of these picks, that 93 pick, you know, that turned into like Jocelyn Thibault, who, mm-hmm. you know, we'll talk about later on. It's in another big trade that they make with Montreal. You know, another pick that they made, the Ron Hextall, you know, the trade that brought Hextall over. Quebec trades Hextall to the Islanders and a first round pick. They swap first round picks. That first round pick becomes Adam Deadmarsh, who was a big piece of this first, obviously, championship team, who then later on gets traded with two first-round picks for Rob Blake back in, like, 2001. So it's so many layers to this trade and how successful it was for the Avalanche, or Quebec, and then into the Avalanche. It's amazing.
No, and I remember when we had Jason Martinez on, you said it there, because they also had a deal. It was the Flyers who they wound up doing a deal with, but the Rangers were competing as well. And, you know, the guys who would have gone, if they would have accepted that Rangers deal, the Rangers, that whole 1940, we'd still be saying that to this day, because with Alexei Kovalov and Mike Richter, like guys like that who were so huge in contributing to that title in 94 for the Rangers fans don't have that if they wind up doing it. So they're kind of lucky that the Flyers stepped in and did it for them, because we'd still be chanting, which would have been nice to still be chanting 1940
and,
to them.
And we talked about it in that episode also. Which was a better trade offer by the Rangers. It was better players And I just think it was also the money as well, but it was a much better trade.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I think Quebec kind of like reneged on the Flyers deal, was willing to take that. And then the arbitrator stepped in and kind of gave it to the Flyers. So again, huge trade. This kicks off this talented team. But you mentioned Peter Forsberg. And I want to ask you, Jeremy, if you had a choice, mm-hmm. let's just say, right, looking at both their careers and, you know, Lindros's career, Peter Forsberg's career, which player would you want to have kept?
It's tough because they both hit the injury bug pretty good in their careers, which we talk about a lot with Lindros, but it kind of gets forgotten that Peter Forsberg was not a healthy player throughout most of his time.
Yeah.
Lindros was a freak of nature player. He's a Hall of Famer. I'm going to lean. It's close, actually, because you look at the numbers, but we are bigger than just looking at numbers here.
That's right.
But I would have to say I'm going to go with Forsberg by a little bit over Lindros for me, just because I like that. I'm always going to go with the guy who makes the players around him better. And to me, in that era, it's hard to find anyone who was that great playmaker who set people up, who made his teammates better than Peter Forsberg. So I would take him. It's a close one. And if you look at like early on, like you get to like 97, you could say Lindros. But I think if you look at the whole picture, I'm going to go with Peter Forsberg for me. How about you?
Yeah, I might be leaning to Forsberg as well, only because he made that transition into like the newer almost did, you know what I mean? Then he obviously had to retire, but he made that transition into like the newer NHL where the game opened up a little bit and, you know, dudes were skating around guys like Lindros, you know what I mean? Like these big defensemen and forwards, like they started just getting a little too quick for them. And I felt like Forsberg can at least play with them a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, and you mentioned how he would set up guys and he was like a great, you know, he did set up guys really well. And, you know, I think Lindros was like more of a goal scorer. He's very physical, obviously. And so Forsberg, again, I opened the show up a little bit talking about him, and he was one of my favorite players. Ironically, he comes back to the Flyers plays well. So it was fun to watch, though.
If he just could have been a little bit healthier, I think it could have been even greater for him because his game wound up lasting. Like, he would always get hurt, but even deep into that career, he was still putting up numbers like crazy.
Yeah.
So
it's a good conversation.
Though, yeah, sure. I think so. But, you know, look at a big piece for, and, you know, we'll get to, you know, they're going to beat Colorado, but Joe Sakic, who I don't think is as talented as Forsberg, but is someone who's consistent. He shows up night in and night out, and he's just as important, you know, to what we see with Colorado and in this dynasty as well.
Absolutely. You know, and we talked about Fedorov, how great he was. You know, on the offensive side, defensive side, Joe Sakic was the same way. You know, he was just as good defensively as he was offensively. And if you look at numbers, you know, he was putting up a lot of points. I think 96, I think he put up 100 plus points. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and in this era was tough to do.
Very hard.
You know what I mean? Like, it was a lot of clutching, grabbing, interference, like, and that was not being called. And, you know, and he had two guys do that, you know, so that just goes to show how skilled Joe Sakic was. Probably the best wrist shot I've ever seen. You know, his wrist shot was amazing. It was fast, but it had a lot of power to it. It was just, he was like a really good goal scorer, man. And then he played in all those Team Canadas. Like, he was an elite player, which really doesn't get talked about. And you're exactly right. Like, you know, I don't hear the name Joe Sakic as much anymore, especially outside of Colorado, you know. So, yeah, great player. Great 1-2 punch with him and Forsberg up the middle. It was a beautiful team they were building at this time.
And was the captain. He was the captain. So he had that leadership with him. But, you know, we look at it, and those are like some of the big pieces that we see for Colorado. And they make that move from Quebec to Colorado for 95-96. And we look at that season, Detroit winds up having a historic season.
Yeah.
You know, setting the record for wins and just really just being so dominant. And we look at it, it's huge to me, because that's when we get the Russian Five starting that night in, I think it was Calgary.
Yeah, it was Calgary.
They're out there in October 95 for the first time. But then there's also this game that really kind of, I guess you could say, accidentally starts this rivalry or really kicks it off.
Yeah.
And it's not with Colorado. It's with Montreal. When Detroit goes into Montreal and they have this goalie, I don't know if you heard of him, this Patrick Waugh guy.
He's a pretty good.
Yeah, maybe, you know, all-time great, but just saying. and Patrick Waugh is at, going against the Red Wings and Montreal, Detroit, and it winds up being an 11-0 game, and Patrick Waugh is out there for 9 of those 11 goals.
Yeah.
And gets pulled when it's 9-0 and winds up doing something that shocks me that no one, it's funny because now when you see certain players,
yeah,
they say they don't want to play all this stuff. I don't hear this about Patrick Waugh. Patrick Waugh, very calmly too. He's yeah, not like,
it was super cool.
It's like, it's almost like he knew, like it wasn't a in the moment thing to me. I felt like he kind of wanted to get out.
It before. Was calculated for sure.
Yeah. Because he just walks off. He's calm. And the, Montreal Canadiens, like their front office, they're right behind the bench. There's no like glass. And he just gets off. He calmly just walks over. He says something to them and he sits down. And Jose, he winds up saying that he's not going to play another second for Montreal, trade him.
That's the most savage thing I've ever seen in my life.
It's pretty something. It's awesome.
In professional sports, it was pretty awesome. Because at that time, they didn't have the boards there either. So, you know, he was sitting right there and he just, you know, comes off the bench, gets pulled. And then, you know, he talks about after that, like that the coach, I'm losing his name right now, but that, you know, him and the coach did not get along.
Yeah.
And he was saying the coach left them in there on purpose to kind of make him look bad, which, you know, pissed him off even more. And then that's why he walked up to the GM and just said, look, this is my last game in Montreal. And then just walked away,
mm-hmm.
you know? And the best part is you see the GM just sitting there like what's going on? Who was a newer GM, who was only a GM for like 40 days at that point in time.
Yeah.
And caught a lot of slack from Montreal fans where, let's be real, it's like hockey's like religion there. Like that's,
oh, for sure.
That's the team. You know what I mean? Like, and it's like if that would have happened, you know, with the Yankees or, you know, the Cowboys or the Lakers, whatever, like Montreal is that huge. So for that to happen and them, you know, as an organization, not like rectify that and fix that with Raw, like it's one of the worst trades also of all time. So,
yeah,
it's bad.
But, you know, I'm completely with Patrick Waugh on this one. But I just think that certain athletes today, you look at in basketball and football, when they do that, they get slammed. And I think Patrick Waugh should not be slammed because, you know, he was the front office, not the front office, but the coach was making him look bad, trying to like set him up. And it wasn't working. But it's just funny to me how he kind of, no one talks about that. But they'll talk about this guy in this sport holding out or that. But I'm like, what? Like you said, nothing more savage than right there saying, I'm not playing another second. And just calmly, just with those big pads, just going to the locker room, just shuffling along. And 4 days later, that trade happened.
Yeah, the coach was Mario Tremblay. And I don't know how I forgot that name. Because I was more thinking of Jacques Demers, but he replaced Jacques Demers. Mm-hmm. But Tremblay, I just always think of the movie Due Date with Zach. You ever seen that?
Mm-hmm.
With
Zach Galifianakis Robert Downey Jr.
Ethan Tremblay. Yeah, so anyway, but so what was said was that, you know, them two had a really rough relationship even before he became the coach, even after he became the coach. So it was just not a good relationship. And, you know, I don't necessarily know, like, what side I would be on. Because again, as a great, he was the best player on that team in Montreal, the Canadiens at that time, obviously. And I don't know. Like, I still think, like, for him to walk off and just walk up to the GM and tell him that, he had to be, it's really pissed, you know. But after a tough game like that, like, there's a lot of emotions. I would have tried to at least try to fix that with Waugh. But I guess they felt as though they just needed to trade him.
Well, I think they knew he was done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what he said.
That but too.
They knew it's done. And you said this trade, and it is pretty known how bad it is, what they wind up, you know, giving to Colorado during the season. You know, which trade do you think was more like lopsided or worse, the Lindros trade or this Patrick Waugh trade?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I would say the Lindros trade was so many guys. Like, so it's really hard, you know, but again, like you talked about earlier, the Flyers got something out of Lindros and some great years. And he brought hockey back to Philadelphia.
Big time.
You know, so this trade might be worse though, like immediate impact wise, because we mentioned earlier, they trade Jocelyn Thibault, who was the 10th pick overall. So if he pans out, then wait a minute, this trade is not that bad, you know. But they also trade Martin Rusinski and Andrei Kovalenko. Kovalenko was a nice player. Wyshynski was a nice player. Yeah, I remember player.
Them as just all right.
Yeah, they were nice players, nice pieces. But the Canadians also trade Mike Keane, who was their captain. You know what I mean? Like, so that's even crazier for me. So they trade these two pieces, and they get those three guys in return, and this kind of like elevates Colorado to a different level.
Let me ask, if they don't get Patrick Waugh, but they get a good goalie, but not one of the all-time greats, is Colorado, are we having this discussion? Are they world champs? Is this a rivalry like that? Like, because that's why I ask it, because to me, Patrick Waugh, and that's why I'm asking you, he's the difference maker for elevating Colorado. So if they don't do this deal, do you think that that team's talented enough with, obviously you can't have a bad goalie in there, you can't have bad goaltending, but they have a good player in there, not a great one, but a good one.
Yeah.
Are they still winning those couple of championships?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
You know, like it's tough to say, right? Like it all depends who they, if they get a different goalie, you know, you never know. But this team was really talented, you know, but even in this game that we're going to talk about, like Wall was, he was making a lot of great saves, you know, in this Western Conference final, he played really well, you know, and in that 0-1 cup run, if I'm not mistaken, is it 0-1? Well, anyway,
yeah, they won an 0-1.
Yeah. When Ray Bourque came. Yeah. So he played well. Like he, even in these playoff runs, he played really, really well. I don't think so. Cause now you're not just talking about, you know, like the Avalanche getting Ron Hextall or, you know, whoever else. That's the first goalie I'm thinking about because of the Lindros trade. But you're talking about Patrick Waugh, who's top five maybe goalie of all time.
I think so, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's a difference maker. I don't care what team he goes to. You know, so, yeah, I mean, I think I don't think they win those two cups without him for sure.
No. So we see after that deal, he winds up, Patrick Waugh comes, Mike Keane comes, and the Avalanche wind up, they win the division. And they wind up being the fourth seed, and they have a 47-25 record in that regular season. But you compare it to what Detroit had when they won 62 games.
Yeah.
Detroit was pretty heavily favored going into the 96 conference finals.
Yeah. I mean, the Avs had 107 points, which is still pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll just to get back to that WOG topic super quick. 0-1, he wins the Conn Smythe as a playoff MVP. So I think that kind of goes to our argument as well.
Yeah, no, I that's why I think that's a way bigger travesty.
Yeah.
And that swings it way in Colorado's advantage.
Because it's an immediate, like, swing.
Right, more than even the Lindros deal, in my opinion. That's like, how can you do that? It's the Patrick Waugh deal.
Yeah, my bad. I didn't mean to jump back.
No, it's like, cool.
I just wanted to do that. Yeah.
But we look at it, so we set it up. The 96 Conference Finals, Red Wings Avalanche.
Great stuff.
You know, you're looking at it. This should be for like Detroit fans. They've been knocking on this door.
Yeah.
Getting close. 94, they had a great year. Upset. 95, they get to the finals.
Natural progression.
Yeah. Right? That's what we think, right? Then they have, hey, the Russian Five is formed. They're looking awesome. They drop 9 goals in Montreal on Patrick Waugh. He gets traded. Hey, a few games after that, they drop 7 goals on Patrick Waugh. So we're like, hey, we're kicking Patrick Waugh's ass. We've been doing it. The conference finals, why should it be any different? But it wound up being pretty different. And that's why you can never guarantee what's going to happen in these Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, because there's so many elements that can happen that can change a whole series, right? And we had a couple here. You know, but like a goalie can get hot for 5 or 6 days, you know, or like 4 or 5 games. Like you never know what can happen in the Stanley Cup run or in any series. But again, there's sometimes events that happen, adjustments, whatever the case may be, that happen that swing the momentum of the whole series. And in this series, that definitely happened as well.
And so we look at it and boom, Colorado winds up taking the first 2 games.
Yeah,
in that series. But I want to look at what happens in game 3 real quick, because we're going to get to what happens in game 6. But is Claude Lemieux and the Avalanche, do they have a right? Because we see that play where, you know, Adam Foote is going to, you know, check Slava Kozlov into the boards. And Kozlov, he anticipates it coming, which pretty badass, by the way.
Pretty smart, yeah.
But he winds up slamming Adam Foote's face into the boards. Adam Foote gets busted and all that, winds up bleeding. He needs 20 stitches. And then Claude Lemieux winds up sucker punching Kozlov in the mouth.
Yeah.
Gets tossed and everything. And then it winds up being the Red Wings do win that game 6-4. But Scotty Bowman then winds up shouting obscenities at Lemieux. In front of his family. They wind up going at it on like the Red Wings bus. It's crazy. Now, I know what you guys are thinking. No, this is still the NHL playoffs. It's not Real Housewives. Yeah.
But not WWE.
Yeah, but that's how it was back then, and that's what was going on. Do you think for what winds up happening later, Jose, the Avalanche have a right to be as pissed? And were they the ones who got screwed first? Because the kind of narrative is, and we'll get to game six, the Red Wings got screwed in their payback.
Yeah.
But people kind of leave out what happened in game three. Is that just kind of what happens in the game, in your opinion, or would the Avalanche right to be pissed?
Oh, yeah, they had a right to be pissed because you don't do that. Like, so the game plan also was for the Avalanche in this series was to be physical with Detroit. A lot of teams try to do that, you know, especially because, again, we can go back to that quote unquote soft image and the European play and how the Russians were playing a lot. So a lot of teams try to be physical with them. But Colorado had the guys to do that, especially defensively, you know, with Adam Foote, Yuri Krupp. Like, they had a lot of big guys who can lay the lumber, man, yeah. They say, man. So the Avs were doing that. You know, so Kozlov, you know, you want to say he was a slick move and all that, but it was kind of a dirty move as well.
That's what I thought too.
You know what I mean? Like, you're going to do that. It's like, if you're going to escape the hit, then fine, then you can do that, but you don't got to grab the guy's back of the, like, the back of the head and slam his face on the board. So Foote obviously had a right to be pissed. So Lemieux, being the type of player that he was more of like an enforcer guy. He was a good player. He had 30 plus goals this season, but he was also an enforcer, he started a lot of shit, like, you know, and you can go back to even our episode of the 94 Ranger Cup run. And, you know, he's in there too, playing with the Devils. Detroit had an issue with him last year. He wins the Conn Smythe, you know, the year that the Devils beat the Red Wings. In 95. So they obviously know what type of player he is. So now he sees Kozlov right there. So he's going to take action. And that was also a dirty, cheap shot as well. You don't just suck up on somebody from the back as well. Mm-hmm. Not only he gets suspended a game too. He gets suspended for game four. So that also hurt the Avalanche. So it was bubbling. You know what I mean? Like, this series was starting to bubble. It was some bad blood going on because obviously too, both of these teams know whoever wins this game is going to win the cup. You know what I mean? Like, cause you got Florida waiting. Florida was not a good team.
They weren't.
You know, the Flyers shouldn't have ever lost to them, but that's another story. They were throwing them stupid rats. Remember they were throwing the rats?
I remember. It hurt.
Oh, I hated those rats. But this was the Stanley Cup championship pretty much, this series.
And everyone knew that. I remember back then, everyone knew that.
Yeah. So, you know, for them losing Claude Lemieux for a game was big for the Avalanche too. But it was a dirty play.
Do you think, because we said it, you know, Scotty Bowman, even at this point, he's known as the GOAT. He's a big name in hockey. Mark Crawford, young Avalanche coach, said, you know,
he's a good coach too.
He was a good coach, but that Scotty, notorious for planting things in the media.
Sending stuff to the league.
Sending stuff to the league. Do you think Scotty Bowman, is that a Scotty Bowman effect of getting Lemieux suspended, or it would have happened anyway?
I think it would have happened anyway. I don't get me wrong. I think Detroit kind of assisted with that a little bit. I mean, because again, if you're the league, and I know I understand you're the league and you run all the teams, but if Scotty Bowman's coming to you with all this stuff, like, you got to listen to it, right? I know I would listen to it for sure. And so I'm sure that didn't help, you know, but it was a cheap shot, like, from Lemieux. It was bullshit, obviously, from Lemieux, but I get his point of view. You know what I mean? Like, I would have been pissed too at Kozlov, and that was his opportunity right there. I would have maybe spun him around. I don't know.
Like, something,
but, you know,
and also, Kozlov's not a tough play. So, like, to me, you don't need to do that. Like, of the Russian Five, I think Konstantinov is the one who
He was a G.
Yeah, he was the only one. Other than that, the other four aren't. And
Fetisov was tough, too.
You know?
Yeah, he was tough. But, yeah, Kozlov was more of like a scorer. You know, he had great hands. You know, like, he was a good player. But for what he did, that was bullshit. What Claude Lemieux did was bullshit. So, it was just like, all right. We're even. You know what I mean? Like, Detroit didn't feel like that. Colorado didn't feel like that because Lemieux got suspended. And then Lemieux changed things up a little bit later.
So then we see what happens. Game four, Colorado wins. They go up 3-1. Game five, Detroit stages off elimination.
Yeah.
Make it 3-2. Then we go back to McNichols, back to Denver.
Yep.
And we have the infamous game six. Avalanche up 3-2, looking to pull off that big upset. But, hey, early on in that first period. And to me, it was, rewatching this game, it was interesting. It was fun to rewatch it. I haven't watched this game. And I've watched that hit so many times that we're going to get to. I haven't watched the entirety of the game in a while. So it was fun to do it. And it's kind of like what we were saying earlier. Like, it was fun to watch how the Red Wings were just a smooth operating machine.
Yeah.
But I kind of just felt like even before everything went down, the Red Wings seemed like a tight team because they were backs against the wall and everyone expected them to win, had this all-time season. And McNichols was rocking.
Oh, yeah.
It was rocking pretty good. But they seemed like just kind of tight, going into it early on, in my opinion, too.
And that can be from previous years. We've been talking about like them coming up short, and that starts to weigh on you. You know, if your favorite, if you have this all time great season, like regular season, and now you find yourself down 3-2 and away to this team. Yeah, I don't blame them for being tight. They deserve to be tight because that you're exactly right. That crowd, man, you couldn't even hear the announcers. And I wanted to like touch on that real quick. Mm-hmm. This game, when you rewatch it, it's on ESPN. You get the ESPN broadcasters. You get Gary Thorne and Bill Clement.
Can't get any better than that.
Can't get any better than that, man. Those two guys raised me on hockey, man. And it was just so good to hear them too. And Gary Thorne was amazing to me, man. Bill Clement, I was always, we get him here in Philly. But Gary Thorne was the man to me.
Gary Thorne or Doc Emmerich?
I got to go Doc Emmerich.
I got to go Doc too. But Gary Thorne's good.
It's very close though.
And people probably would think that, but I think Gary Thorne's a close second.
Yeah, it's very close. So yeah, but you're right. You can tell Colorado's coming out and they want to win this here. They want to win this at home. They don't want to go to game seven in Detroit. So a lot of times you'll see teams kind of just come all out, and that's what Detroit did. Detroit was skating really hard. And you're right. The Colorado skating really hard. Detroit kind of looked like they were a little slower this game.
And it's funny, the Detroit, to me, early on, they were getting some good attempts on Wah, but it wasn't doing anything.
Yeah.
And it kind of felt like, well, if you're not, and this is just, I know we have hindsight's 2020. It kind of just watching it back felt like if it's not going for you early on, you're in trouble. And, hey, boom, later into the first period, we see the captain for the Avalanche, Joe Sakic, gets that goal. It's huge.
Yeah,
the crowd goes nuts after that.
Yeah, he had an amazing playoff run. Conn Smythe Trophy winner for MVP for the playoffs this year. And he had a great game, and he was having a great playoff.
Like, yeah.
He was having a great playoff run, excuse me.
But, we look at it, and it's kind of, like you said, Colorado's going hard. But later in the first period, and sometimes I think we forget, it's interesting that this was like the first period, but Claude Lemieux, I guess he wasn't done.
Yeah,
he still had some bad blood. He still was mad at Kozlov. He was still mad at Scotty Bowman yelling at him in front of his wife and kids. But he takes it out on good old Chris Draper.
Yeah, and it was a vicious hit. I don't know if Lemieux thought all of that was going to happen. Again, that's something for him to talk about, but it was a nasty, vicious hit. Like, it was just, as soon as you saw the hit, it was like you knew it was going to be bad, And, if you haven't seen the hit, like Lemieux comes from behind and Chris Draper's right by the bench and his face just hits like the top of the boards.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, it was really bad. And, he's out immediately. He doesn't want to get carted off or nothing. He wants to skate off, which kudos to him. Them hockey players are tough. And he's back at he's in the locker room. He doesn't come back. And to me, this changes the whole dynamic of the game, because I feel like after that hit, Detroit was just, they looked shell-shocked to me.
Which is interesting to me because...
Me too.
That's the narrative, but A, it's early in the first period.
Yep.
B, they wind up getting that power play and Paul Coffey gets the goal to tie it up, make it 1-1.
Yep.
So it's a 1-1 game. And then C, according to them after the game, I know we're jumping, but like, they said that they had no idea how bad the hit was.
Yeah.
So to me, how can you not know how bad the hit was, but then it affects you? Like, I think you're talking out both sides of your mouth there, Detroit. in my opinion.
I don't believe any of that either. So I'm glad you brought that up, because to me, when a hit like that happens to on a team, like, you know, on a teammate, they didn't even respond to that hit. You know, Lemieux gets ejected, you know, so that, I mean, I guess that can, that's a part of it, because now you don't have the guy who actually did it. But still, you know, we'll talk about what happens next season, but it wasn't just about Lemieux the next season either. So I was shocked that they didn't respond in this game, you know, and I was shocked. Like, I'll be honest. Like, I was so surprised. I was rewatching this game. I was waiting for somebody to come back, and they nobody did. And again, I just felt like it shell-shocked Detroit, and they were just done after this hit. Like, Colorado just took over, and this was an ass-whooping, you know, game six. But I agree with that, because you had two intermissions in the locker room. What were you doing then, you know? And they were talking about only Eisenman knew how bad it was. So why wasn't he talking about it?
And that's why I look at it. I don't blame, because, you know, the stigma we were talking, we were going to keep saying it, went to the Russian players. I'm looking at Steve Eisenman, Darren McCarty. I'm looking at these guys saying,
Martin LaPointe, all these
Where are you guys? Yeah. Lindstrom, whoever. Like, okay, like, that's not Sergei Fedorov's game.
Yeah.
You know, that's not, besides, like I said, Konstantinov, that's not their game.
Nope.
But where are you guys at to say, come on? And it's still so early in the game. If it was in the third period, so I can be like, okay.
Yeah.
You scored right after that to tie it up.
Yeah.
And to me, it just showed that they weren't ready for the moment. They weren't ready for game six. And as a team, they weren't a tough team yet.
No.
Like, physically and I guess mentally, they weren't there yet.
Yeah. And again, I'm going to keep harping on this, but I was shocked, to be honest, because again, a lot of these big hits, you get that immediate reaction. But now you hit somebody like that now, oh, you're fighting, you're doing something. It's like three guys fighting, and it's going to turn ugly. Here, this didn't happen. You know, again, like you mentioned, Detroit ties it up. So the game is there. Like, the game is in grasp. Like, you know, and I can also understand it from another aspect. Like, all right, you don't want to, like, want to take too many penalties and then obviously turn around and lose this game, because, you know, the power plays was a big deal in this game. Colorado had an amazing game. They had like three goal power play goals. Detroit was like one for like six or seven. So that obviously was the difference, but you got to do something, man. Like, you can't just let something like that happen, and just, it was tough.
No, and I think it just shows that, especially in that era, and the game has, and we'll get at the end, you know, how the game has changed, but you needed to have that toughness, not just to protect your stars, but to kind of, because those big hits, that guy sticking up for your teammate, that would galvanize a team in the NHL.
Absolutely.
And they, to me, were lacking that. They didn't have that. And it showed, and it shows that, you know, we say, like, don't get me wrong, everyone has an opinion on whether the fighting back then was good or bad, but an enforcer was important to the team, and not, like I said, not just for protection, but it got the team, it got the crowd going when you needed to, when it needed to happen. And the Red Wings needed that, to me, really bad, because there's no way, when you see the hit, you see him get carted off, you have, like Jose said, those two intermissions. Hey, you're in there, people talk, you know how bad this hit was.
Or not even, like, you see the hit. It happened in front of their bench. Like, you know, so it
that's what, another thing. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. It was a vicious hit and the guy was out. So I don't think you need to see how he looked afterwards. I don't think you need to get an injury update from a trainer. Like, to me, the hit happened. It happened right in front of us. We got to do something about this, and we can't just let this slide. Colorado has a lot of great players, but now we got to start coming at these guys. And that's how hockey was played, especially back then. It's still played like that a little bit, not as much, but you know, it's like a tit for tat. Like, it's just, you got our guy, we got to get your guy now. And they waited way too long to do that. And it cost them.
And we see, you know, 1-1 after the first, second period is just, it's an avalanche, no pun intended.
It's a good one, though.
But Jose mentioned it. They get those two power play goals in the second period. Another one from Joe Sakic, Mike Ricci, and Peter Forsberg gets a goal.
Forsberg's goal was nasty.
It was pretty good. Yeah. It was pretty good. And that really puts the game out of reach for him, Jose. You know, it's 4-1, and Detroit has no fight in them.
Yeah, it's really ugly at that point. And the crowd is going nuts. You got the, which I love in hockey, especially in the playoffs, you got the Osgood chance. Like, oh, it's so good. And that crowd is rocking like you were talking about. And it was so another thing in hockey, if you're not like a big hockey expert or a fan, you know, when a game is out of hand, a lot of times that's when you can get some of that payback
for sure
back. This game's 4-1. Like, they're not coming back. Patrick Waugh is having a great game. Detroit has some chances, especially on the power play, and he was stopping everything. You know, so this was, to me, their opportunity, especially, like, late in the third period. Oh, no, we're going to take care of this. And they don't. And it just, to me, it goes back to that quote-unquote, like, soft, like, finesse type of team that they were. And that's exactly what they were.
Yeah. And it showed. And the Avalanche wound up winning this game 4-1. They win the series 4-2. Wound up eventually beating Florida in the finals to be 96 Stanley Cup champs. Them. It was ugly. But, you know, for those who don't know, after a series, the teams kind of line up and they all shake hands. And I've always kind of given it, because sometimes there's been some ugly moments and ugly series. And I'm like, man, they're really shaking hands with this guy.
It's a great tradition.
It's awesome to see. And that's why I'm like, that's really cool to see. One thing I could think of, like amateur wrestling, like before a match, guys have to shake hands. Like, it is cool to see that kind of sportsmanship. But
and like you said, especially after a rough series where you see these two teams beating the shit out of each other. And, you know, there's a lot of bad blood there. And for them to put all that aside for the sake of sportsmanship, all line up, shake hands. It's one of the best traditions in sports.
Man. I agree with that. But Claude Lemieux out there celebrating.
As he should be.
And as he should be. But the Red Wings have no problem shaking his hand. They just, hey, good game, good game, good game, good game.
Yeah.
And it still goes to that point to me. I think they just were shell-shocked. I don't believe them, in my opinion. I think they just felt the pressure. Detroit, felt the pressure of, hey, you guys always a bridesmaid, never a bride. And they shook his hand because, to me, like you said, there's no way you don't know how bad that hit was. Actually, at this point, the game's over. But some people for the Red Wings had some comments afterwards.
I can't believe I shook this guy's friggin' hand after the game. That pisses me right off.
Dino Cicerelli with one of the best quotes of all time for me. And It's tough. And I was looking back, like, I'm trying to remember if there was ever a time where guys didn't really shake hands. I there's one I can't remember. I know Crosby was celebrating when they beat Detroit and he forgot to come on and shake hands. And he caught a lot of slack for that. But, you know, the game's over. They didn't go to the locker room, but man, that had to be, that had to be tough. Like, cause you knew what he just did. You don't know the severity of it. I don't think they do. And he's standing there smiling and happy and ready to go to Stanley Cup Finals. And you got to come and shake his hand. It's tough, man.
It's hard. It's hard. Let me ask you, though, because, you know, Claude Lemieux, he's on that team in 95 with the Devils, 96 with the Avalanche. You look at his numbers, and, like, he's probably one of the most hated guys. He's up there with, like, a Sean Avery. Barnaby.
Yeah, Satikainen, like all those
like
guys.
He's up there. People don't like him, but he's got like Hall of Fame numbers. Jose, do you think Claude Lemieux should be a Hall of Famer?
He's a Hall of Famer, in my opinion. This was his 12th year. And again, in hockey years, it's a little different, but this guy had 39 goals, you know, and people think he was just a rough and tough, like, goon. No, this guy can play. You know what I mean? Like, and not only can he play, but he always stepped up in those big games. And, you know, you're looking at it here, you know, he was obviously had an impact in this game. You talked about that 95 Stanley Cup Finals. Like, he had a great run, you know, with the Devils, winning the Conn Smythe. Like, so big games, he stepped up. He was always involved in the play. I remember when the Devils were playing the Flyers, he gave the Flyers hell. Mm-hmm. You know, not only was he like starting stuff all the time, but again, scoring big goals. And to me, 4 Stanley Cups. He's a Hall of Famer, in my opinion.
9th all time in playoff goals. 80 career playoff goals.
That tells you, one, you got to play in a lot of playoff games.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To have that many goals. And two, he stepped up big time. And I love players like that.
And one of 11 players win the Stanley Cup with 3 or more different teams. So to me, that shows, and he contributed on those. So
yeah,
that shows that when you brought Claude Lemieux in, he made your organization better. Do you think this hit is the reason why he's not in the Hall of Fame?
I think this hit maybe, and then a lot of other stuff. Like, again, like, because he was He was a grimy player. I'll give him that. You know, he was a playoff time. He was a great player. Overall, he was a really good player. But what people know about him is he was a grimy guy. You know, he's a grimy dude. He did a lot of shit to piss a lot of teams off. So maybe that's what it is. This is like a little backlash of like, hey, like I remember when you played against us back in 94 and you did this and this and that. Like, I don't know. But that's the only reason I can think of, like that teams are like holding them back, or the Hall of Fame is like holding them back, letting them sweat a little bit. Man, he definitely deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
I think so, too. I think. Now, that hit that he wound up doing in game six on Chris Draper, wound up breaking Draper's orbital, his cheek, and his jawbone. He winds up coming back.
Dented a couple teeth back.
Yeah. I mean, you see him after he addresses the media. His face is rough.
Yeah.
And he winds up not coming back till like midway through the 96-97 season. So it was that gruesome of a hit that took Chris Draper out for a while.
Yeah, it was ugly. And I think even when he came back, he had to play with like a face shield type of thing, which in hockey is really hard to play because it fogs up sometimes. Like, but yeah, it was, and it, I don't want to say like it changed his career, you know, because he wasn't like a world-class player. He was just a really good defensive player. He was quick too. He had some speed to him. But you know, who knows? You never know. Like, this might be a guy who's like next year, the following year, is going to step in and kind of play well and just get better and better. You know, this hit could have had a lot of like lingering damage to him and like confidence wise and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm not saying Chris Draper was going to become Sergei Fedorov, you know, but you don't know like what a hit like this can do to a player and how it can change things.
So it's pretty impactful. Darren McCarty said that he wind up, I don't know if he picked him up from the hospital or he picked him up, but he said that he just looked at Chris Draper and said, I'll take care of it.
As he should.
And that, yeah.
He was the tough guy of the team. So he should have took care of it that game. But I get Lemieux was ejected. I understand that. So I don't know, and not to go back on this, but I don't know if that took the lust out of it or the hunger out, whatever you want to call it, from Detroit for the get back. But you got to do something, man.
Well, you know what's... It's interesting to me from hearing these guys, even Darren McCarty, talk about it. And it's the truth. It matters about winning. You want to win the game.
Yep.
And it's a balance when you see, not just in hockey, but in playoffs, because there's that extra physicality. Don't get pushed around. But you want to win. So there is a balance to like, hey, we're seeing, especially in like a hockey or a basketball or even baseball, like we don't want to be intimidated. We're seeing them for 7 games.
Yeah.
Ultimately, hey, don't get pushed around, but you want to win. And I felt like hearing like Darren McCarty and the Red Wings, they were focused on winning, which is what you're supposed to be. But what comes with that is you just got shook right now.
Yeah.
And you look like you're intimidated, look like you're scared. And that comes with that winning mentality of we're not going to be pushed around. You're not going to push my guy around, and that brotherhood, because that is what it could have done.
Yep.
It could have divided, which it has done in many sports where, hey, you didn't have my back. You didn't support me in this time. And that can divide a locker room. And luckily for Detroit, it wound up not doing that. But that's what could have happened.
Yeah. And if it did happen, I would totally understand it, you know. And, you know, even Chris Draper like has a quote and he says, is the league telling me I have to take things into my own hands? Like, if I have to do something, pretty much to me that said, man, like, where was everybody at this game? Like, if I have to do it on my own, then I'll do it on my own. And he wasn't that type of guy. Like, he wasn't that type of player. He wasn't like one of these fighters or anything like that. So I don't know. I'm glad, and we'll get into this, but the following season they get a guy who they don't have to worry about that anymore. And I don't want to jump ahead too far.
No, go ahead.
And Brendan Shanahan.
Yeah, that's where I was going.
You know, Brendan Shanahan is one of these players who, one, will put up 50 goals on you, and he will also whoop your ass too if he had to. And if Brendan Shanahan was on that team, on that 96 team, I guarantee you he's doing something. Like, he's fighting somebody. Like, he's doing something. And for me, what Brendan Shanahan also did was he brought that extra toughness. Like, they had it in McCarthy, and, you know, they had a couple of other guys who were pretty tough. And you talk about Konstantinov, he was really tough. But Brendan Shanahan is a different type of beast. You know, we were talking about these power forwards earlier in the show. You add him right into that because he was a great player.
Right. And that to me is the difference maker.
Yep.
That's one of those, you know, we were talking with our producer, shout out to Vince Quinn, the other day, And it was that arms race like the 49ers and Cowboys had in the 90s. You know, the Cowboys get a Charles Haley. The Niners are like, all right, we're going to get Ken Norton Jr. from you. And,
yeah,
you know, bringing these Deion Sanders with you. And to me, that's what Brendan Shanahan is. After that one, they brought him in 96, 97. Now, it's different because then Colorado's the one seed, winds up going to be like the top, the best record for the West, you know, defending champs 96, 97. And Detroit's kind of just like mullying along and people are like, what's up with this team?
Yeah.
Is this experiment with the Russian Five and these Europeans not great? And Colorado winds up beating them three times in the regular season. So, and, you know, listening to these guys talk about it, they're like, we got to get a win. We got to get a win. We can't beat these guys. Claude Lemieux did not play in, I think, one of the games.
No, in the first three games.
First three games, there's Lemieux.
Yeah, he tore a muscle. He was out 10 to 12 weeks. So the get back game wasn't happening either. You know, so.
But to me, it still should have.
It definitely should have happened. Yeah, absolutely. So, and again, you mentioned Colorado was 3-0 against Detroit. So now what everybody's looking at is, not only is Colorado having this really good season,
right,
but now Detroit can't beat these guys, you know? So now what's going to happen? And then we have that one. They have one more regular season game left to go in 97.
Yep. March 26, 97. Fight Night at the Joe. Is that the name you like? I like that better than Brawl in Hockey Town. I like Fight Night at the Joe.
Fight Night at the Joe is good.
That's my favorite nickname because Joe Louis Arena.
Yeah.
It is something. It's one of those all-time games. That's like not greatest games, but one of those all time, like most memorable, infamous games, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Is Fight Night at the Joe, what happened in 97. And it winds up just being just an all out war.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and again, this is the first game Claude Lemieux is back. You know, it's the first game he's back playing in Detroit. I believe they played one game before that when he was playing, but that was in Colorado. This is the first game back in Detroit. And all hell breaks loose.
Avalanche holding the Red Wings in their own zone. Larionov and Forsberg away from the play. Peter Forsberg took a swipe at Igor Larionov. And it isn't often that we see Igor Larionov go, but he did. And now Darren McCarty gets his shots in at Claude Lemieux. And look who came all the way out to try to help. Patrick Roy. Oh, my goodness. You never know when to expect it, Darren McCarty said before. Vernon and Waugh.
That was awesome.
That's unbelievable.
Yes. Yeah. And I wanted to point out, because again, you know, people talk about what Darren McCarty did, but he didn't start it. You know what I mean? Like, and it was Igor Larionov, who has never had a professional fight.
Small guy, very small.
He said it himself in the Russian Five documentary. He said, I've never fought in a game before. That was the first time. And then you look at Peter Forsberg, who was a tough guy. Like, mm-hmm. Peter Forsberg, he'll put you through the glass. If he had to drop the gloves, he would do that and score, put up four goals in a game if he had to. Like,
and three dish.
Yeah. So it was, but it was an odd way to start this thing with those two guys. And next thing you know, McCarthy has that opportunity and lays out Lemieux.
Now, Darren McCarthy says he didn't do a sucker punch. He said, I cold cocked him.
Because it was face to face.
Because he was face to face. Do you agree? Is that a sucker punch or
No, sucker. He's right. Sucker punch is from behind.
Sucker punch from behind, but it's still, is it a cheap shot?
No.
I think, because to me, when you're out there, you got to be like boxing.
Protect yourself at all times.
And that's what I felt Claude Lemieux should have known.
Something was coming.
A, because he's an asshole and people don't like him anyway.
Yeah.
And then B, for what happened. Should have known. And we heard, you know, in the broadcast, Darren McCarty was saying, you never know when it's coming.
Yep.
So to me, you should have been aware. And McCarty just drops Lemieux.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you something about all of this, right? And we'll definitely get into what happened afterwards and that. But I want to go back to Scotty Bowman real quick, you know, because you got an infamous quote from Scotty Bowman. And he talks about this would never happen if Lemieux just apologized. What do you think about that, Darren?
It's bullshit.
So do I.
Yeah, it's bullshit. I mean, if I lose respect for you, if that's the case, honestly, if that's true, and I'm glad you brought that up because I've forgotten about that part. I lose respect for you as a team if that's the case. Because to me, an apology, okay, maybe that makes me not want to take it on the streets with you.
Yeah.
But on the ice,
doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Like an apology, hey, it's all, you know, when we're on the ice, anything goes. So like to me, no, you have to do this for your team, for Chris Draper, for the morale.
Yep.
The apology doesn't mean anything to me. And Scotty Bowman said that and I disagree with him. And I'm glad that's not the case because I would have lost a lot of respect for Detroit if that wound up being true.
And I also feel like that just added to Lemieux's like mystique in a way. You know what I mean? Like him saying, I'm not apologizing for shit. Like, you know, I respect that. You know what I mean? Like he didn't have to. He doesn't have to do that. It was a hit. Now to him, I don't know if it was on purpose or not. I don't know. But, you know, if it happened, it happened. Let's just handle it on the ice. And that's what he was about. I don't know what Scotty Bowman and these guys were waiting for. And he wasn't giving it to them.
No. So, you know, between when you see once McCarty, Cole Cox, and just lays out Lemieux and he's on top of him, and then Patrick Waugh, the goalie, which Patrick Waugh was a tough guy for a goalie.
I'll tell you what, he had two wins in this game.
Yeah.
He had two wins because he was whooping ass that game.
I thought so too. He comes out and the guy they brought in, we talked, Brendan Shanahan, just leaps like Superman.
There you go.
And intercepts and has his guys back. And that is, to me, it's the McCarty hit and also what Shanahan did. That's like the turning point. It's like that 1-2 punch because then you can't let, you see, you know, Patrick Waugh with the pads, the goalie, you see him coming.
Yeah.
So if you
from
let,
far away.
Right. If you let him get to Darren McCarty, shame on the Red Wings.
Yep.
So Brendan Shanahan, like you said earlier, he knows he's a kick-ass kind of a guy. He went in there. I mean, it's a great moment. Like, yeah. Just swoops in.
Yeah, they both jumped in. It was like some Matrix shit.
It was awesome.
They hit each other in the air. They spun around. But then Adam Foote comes in, and now that's another tough dude. Adam Foote's
tough.
It's a tough guy, man. So him and Shanahan fight. Then Mike Vernon comes down. No, at this point, it was Osgood.
No, Mike Vernon comes in.
Oh, it was Vernon. Yeah.
Mike
Vernon comes down. They start fighting, which was a really good fight. You know, him
Vernon
and
gets some good hits in on Waugh, too.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a great fight. Yeah. And then none of them fell. It was like perfectly balanced. Like, it was great. But, and then later on, Shanahan and Foote fight again. You know, it was Adam Denmarsh came in and he fought McCarthy later on. Like, it was great. And then McCarthy doesn't even get a fight in major. He gets double minor,
yeah,
which is blows my mind. He would have been thrown out today's game.
Suspended,
yeah,
major suspensions. All these things now
by Shanahan,
yeah, yeah, true. All these things now are just major suspensions, yeah. Like for multiple games. Like you couldn't do this stuff now, but it's just unbelievable. Waugh's cut open and everything, and
Amu's cut open.
Yeah, these 15 stitches. He gets taken off, and the guy Chris Draper. He's just watching it all. The guy who's kind of like wound up being sparked, he's just watching everything happen. But unbelievable.
This was a big moment for the Red Wings. It's obvious it's a big moment, you know, for them, you know, for the organization. And again, we always talk about getting over that hump. I think at this point, they stepped up to Colorado. Like it was no more backing down. Colorado just couldn't come in and be physical with them like they were doing for the previous three games and for that game six. In 96, it was no, like, we're here, we can fight with you, we can play with you, we can out physically you. You know, it was, and again, I thought for me, it was led by Shanahan. And again, like, you want to think Shanahan's like some big tough guy. Like, he was, again, a really good player. 96, 97, he had 46 goals. Like, he was a really, really, really Absolutely. Good player, man. And I think that was a perfect signing for Detroit. And it's exactly what they needed.
The number two, we talk about the names we think of for these rivalry and these teams. Fedorov, number one for the Red Wings. Number two, Shanahan, always for me.
Yeah.
He was the second guy I thought of once they started winning these cups. But what's also huge is not only do they stick up for their guys and they show toughness, they're down 5-3.
Yep.
And they said, Darren McCarty, all those guys, hey, it doesn't matter. We got to get the win. So then for them to come back and, you know, Shanahan gets that goal to tie it up, you know, at 5-5.
There you go.
But then, man, Darren McCarty.
Who doesn't get thrown out.
No, doesn't. A few seconds of overtime, Shanahan to McCarty, gets it past Patrick Waugh for the 6-5 victory, and Joe Louis Arena goes crazy. And that is, they finally get that win over their nemesis, Colorado. And to me, that is the turning point for Detroit and really kicks off this unbelievable run of championships for them.
Yeah, they needed this win. They absolutely needed this win. If Colorado comes in and all of that happens and Colorado wins by a goal 5-4 or something like that, it's to get over that hump is huge, man. Like in sports, for teams like that, no matter how great they are, we can always go back to any sport. We talk about basketball with like the Bulls and the Pistons against the Pistons. You know, we go football with, you know, we talked about Dallas and like Green Bay, teams like that where Dallas constantly was beating Green Bay year in and year out in the playoffs. Or like we mentioned the 49ers, like those two teams going back and forth with each other. Like there's so many different examples of a team needing to get over this team. And the Avalanche came out of nowhere to become this team. It was just in 1 year, but it was just more than getting over that hump. It was like they were getting bullied a little bit by the Avalanche, you know, and that had to change. And until that changed, that's when they were starting to win the games. And that's exactly what happened with this series.
No, it winds up kind of really spurring them on into the playoffs. Now, Colorado's the one seed, but, you know, Detroit winds up getting, you know, they beat St. Louis in the first round in six games. They sweep the Ducks, you know, in the second round, the conference finals. They wind up really taking it to them, and they wind up getting over that hump and beating the Avalanche, the defending champs, in six games.
Yeah.
And, you know, winds up going to the Stanley Cup finals. Ugh. It's hard. It's hurtful because we're Philly dudes, but I remember that series. And they really kind of put to bed about the European style can't do it, because just like, you know, the flip side in 95 when the Devils roughed them up and they got swept, the Legion of Doom, you know, with LeClair, Lindros, Michael Rimberg, big guys, physical guys, and they get swept.
Yeah, and it wasn't even close, you know. And
no, especially that game, especially when we went to Detroit, it got really bad.
It was really ugly. And so, and you're exactly, that was a great point there, because you're exactly right, because what that series showed was how this style of play was, one, going to change the NHL, but two, how the current NHL style of play with the big guys and, like, you know, the big defensemen and, you know, that was not good enough to beat these guys. Because the Flyers had all that. Like you said, you mentioned the Legion of Doom. Not only the Legion of Doom, but they had big defensemen, you know, like Chris Therrien and Samuelson, and they also had Paul Coffey. He was not a big guy, but he was older. He was smaller. But, you know, they had a lot of big guys. And the Red Wings was just skating right by them, you know, and it's obvious. It's not even like something like if you know hockey. No, it's obvious. Like the Flyers cannot stay with they cannot keep up with Detroit. And it was just like every game was like uglier and uglier and uglier and uglier. And the Flyers had no answers. And Detroit, once they got over that Avalanche hump, it was over. They were taking over the league.
And they wound up going back to back. You know, it's really the 97 is the end of the Russian Five, because of what happened tragically a few days after the Red Wings win that 97 Cup, and, you know, Vladimir Konstantinov, what, you know, being in that accident and tragically being paralyzed and never playing again.
It's sad to be, you know, in that celebration and waiting for so long to finally win this Stanley Cup, and something like that, like tragic accident happened. The Tsov was in the car. You know, he kind of came away with a little chest injury. Yeah. Then they had the massage therapist. He was in bad shape too. So it was ugly, man. And it kind of took away some of the luster from that championship. But either way, they won the cup. And it was a really, really great team.
And I just say that because even though the team was collected over, you know, from 89 to 95, not the team, but the Russian Five were really together for two seasons as a full Russian Five. But what an impact that they made on hockey, on that stigma, and on, you know, really kind of breaking down like barriers in a way of like that Cold War, like, oh, those Russians, they don't have any emotion. They're different. No, they were one of the guys on the team and they blended in well. And, it kind of showed a lot of people like, hey, there's people just like us. And for only two seasons together as a unit, the impact is still felt to this day.
Yeah, because the impact what European players have on the NHL, that started coming after this point. You know, after this Detroit team, like, you were starting to get a lot of guys from the Czech Republic, from, you know, from Russia, obviously, from Sweden, like all these guys started coming over. And not that the NHL didn't have these guys, but they didn't have as many of them. And now these guys are coming over and they're becoming the best players in the league. You know, we're talking about Fedorov, Pavel Bure. Like there's so many skilled, amazing, amazing players. And, you know, what frustrates me also with, on another topic with the Flyers, it's like I felt like it took them so long to get with that trend.
Oh, yeah.
And I think for me, that also stems from like that when the Flyers were playing the Soviet Union in, you know, in the 70s.
The Ed Snyder effect, yeah, honestly.
I think that had a big thing to do with it. Now, don't get me wrong, 97 that they draft Dinah Zubris, who's Russian. But I can't remember any other guys after that, you know, and it just didn't look good. And you see all these other teams adding these European players and becoming this skilled speed teams. And some teams were not willing to make that transition and they pay the price for it. So, I mean, again, if looking back, what that Russian Five did in those two seasons, man, we talked about it. They changed the way people look at the NHL and how the NHL game is played.
And we wind up seeing kind of like a back and forth. Yeah, the next year, the Red Wings repeat in 98. They sweep the Caps. You know, the Avalanche wind up still playing the playoffs a few more times. You know, we see the Avalanche get that title. Ray Bourque gets his title in 01.
And Rob Blake.
Yeah.
He had a good team, yeah.
You know, the Red Wings win in 02. Get that other ring. And they bring up, you know, Dominic Hasek winds up coming in as a goalie for the Red Wings, you know, someone who is on par with Patrick Waugh and Brodeur as like all three of them are top five all time goalies, but those are the big three, I think, of the 90s into the 2000s of like great goalies. It's Waugh, Hasek, and Brodeur. And
yeah, they were always battling for that top spot.
And,
sure.
You know, Waugh almost fought Dominic Hasek.
That was funny.
When he's with the Red Wings, and that would have been the third, you know, goalie from the Red Wings that Waugh would have fought, but Hasek winds up tripping. And Darren McCarty said he's glad that Hasek tripped because he would have got his ass kicked.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, because in 98, Waugh has that fight with Osgood.
Yeah.
And that Waugh looked like he whooped his ass. And yeah, Hasek was a little guy too. So I'm glad that didn't happen.
Yeah, I'm glad for Dominic. But
yeah, I like Dominic Hasek. He was a great
guy. I love Dominic Hasek. He's my favorite goalie.
Yeah, he was great. Very unorthodox, but he was great. But just kind of to your point there, I mean, what you're starting to see is not only have these organizations built themselves from drafting super well, making some really smart trades, you know, now it's like the destination to go to if you want to win.
Right.
You know, if you want to win the cup, how can I get to one of these two teams? And that's exactly what was happening. And I felt like that Cowboys 49ers analogy fits right in because you're exactly right. Every year they were like, let me get with this one guy. Now we got to counter that.
Yeah.
Now we got to continuously counter each other. And that's what makes this rivalry so great. It's like how these organizations made each other get better and better and better and better. And that's exactly what you want in a series like this.
And, you know, so about how great Ray Bourque was, and he was, you know, Mr. Boston Bruin, and, you know, on these lists of best athletes who haven't won it. And then where does he go to get it? Colorado. And it was a great story to see him.
Yeah, I was rooting for them that year.
Yeah, same. I wasn't a Colorado guy, but with Ray Bourque, even though he was a Bruin, you know, but you got to like Ray Bourque, great player, and he got the cup. And like I said, Dominic Hasek, a guy who you're like, man, like if they win, you know, if he's on a winning team, what that would do for him, he goes to the Red Wings and they get over that hump, you know, for him and get that cup. Jose, will we ever see a rivalry like this again in hockey?
No, I don't think so. Not the way the game is played today. It won't let it get out of hand like this. You know, because at this era, I seen some all-out, like, melees, like they call them, in NHL. Like, I've seen a lot of them. I remember the Flyers in Ottawa had a really...
That was a great one.
Had a really good one. Like,
my favorite.
Yeah, there was so many Flyers in Buffalo. I know I'm kind of trending on Flyers here, but it's just those are the ones I remember watching, you know, and... The way the game today is played, like you barely have any guys on the team who are going to fight, number one. And number two, it's nowhere near as physical as it was back in the 90s and early 2000s. And is that good for the game or not? I think so. Cause I'm not one who's like against fighting. I'm not against that. I mean, this sport, you kind of need that, because there's guys out there that will take out your best player and you need a guy to kind of combat that. But you look at a lot of these rosters today, they don't have that guy. They don't want to waste that roster spot, because you're pretty much wasting a roster spot with one of those goons, quote unquote goons. And
absolutely,
you know, so I don't think we will ever see anything like this. I know the Flyers and Penguins had a really great thing going there. The Caps Penguins is really close. I mean, it's, again, just not with all the fighting and all that. There's just, these two teams are constantly playing each other in the playoffs. So I think that's what makes it really, really juicy. But a conversation that me and you had off the air was, that's a geographical kind of,
like a divisional thing.
Yeah, like they play each other a lot throughout the season. And then when they meet in the playoffs, it's even worse. And it just builds that hatred. These two teams geographically are nowhere near each other. You know, they're not in the same division, in the same conference, but not in the same division. So it was just an odd thing that happened. But when it happened, it just blew up. And I don't think we will ever see that again. We'll have teams that don't like each other, that play each other a lot in the playoffs, but nothing like this.
Yeah. No, I can. You said 49ers, Cowboys, or, you know, at this peak when you have like Colts and Patriots kind of.
Steelers, Ravens.
Yeah, you know.
That's like a vicious rivalry. I like watching those games.
So it's something that it was, to me, the best rivalry I've seen in my time for hockey. And it, to me, it defined that era. And I guess I wanted to ask you this one, though, because you asked me Lindros or Forsberg. So Sergei Fedorov or Peter Forsberg?
Oh, that's tough. If I knew Forsberg would stay healthy, I would take Forsberg. Fedorov was different, man. I don't know. He was a game changer for me.
And he was my guy. I love Sergei Fedorov.
Yeah, I loved both of them. I loved watching both of them play. It's just a healthy Forsberg, it's an easy pick for me. I'm taking Forsberg, you know. But again, you mentioned the injury history, and even when he would play, it was like still, he would play like 50 games, have 70 points. Like, it was just, he was just an amazing player, but Fedorov was different, man. And he was a total package. And not that Forsberg wasn't, but Fedorov was a little more faster. You know, defensively, maybe was a little bit better, you know, because Forsberg was great too. But it that's a tough one, you know. But either way, you'll be okay.
I agree. I'm going to go with Sergei. No disrespect to Peter Forsberg, but Sergei Fedorov was a bad man, and he was just ice in his veins. I loved watching him.
And a couple of things looking at this game, rewatching this game, that kind of brought back some really good memories. One was, this was the era, we talked about this too, when Fox had the light up puck or whatever
That's right.
I think it was the 97 game that had that puck. I just thought it was funny. I was like, man, Fox was really trying. And that was a good time for hockey. And I also, looking at those Red Wing jerseys, that's when Nike stepped in. Ah, those jerseys with the Nike sign, it was just a beautiful, beautiful thing. Then he had the skates and the sticks. Like, it was just Nike's Nike.
I think that is also what I sometimes forget, but Detroit was such a great hockey, and it still is a great hockey city.
Town, yeah.
You know, and that's what is like, it kind of reminds me of like St. Louis with the Cardinals. Like,
yeah,
it just goes hand in hand. And I think like baseball will always live in St. Louis. It's just beautiful, like a beautiful relationship.
Yeah.
To me, like, I have family in Detroit, and like, even in the hood, they knew about the Red Wings. Like, yeah, they knew. But that's where I got a lot of this from, was like back then going to Detroit for reunions and they could talk hockey.
Jeremy Dove hanging out in 8 Mile.
I was. And they were getting on me because what happened in 97. Yeah. I heard a lot of that. I didn't have much to come back with either. Yeah. It was like, we'll get you next year. Yeah. You know, it was all that kind of stuff. But no, it just brings you back. It's a really fun time. And I'm glad that the game has progressed the way it is, but I do understand when people say they missed this time with the more violence, because it just brought that intensity to it that it's hard to find nowadays. But it's good to see that the skill level is what is first and foremost, because that's what it should be in all sports.
Yeah.
The skill of the player, not being a goon.
Yeah. And yeah, you shouldn't win games by like kicking somebody's ass.
Yeah.
You know, like, we, you know, here in Philly, and again, I'm going to reference it, like the Flyers and the Broad Street Bullies. You know, the city loved it. I mean, it was way before our time, but the NHL hated it. You know what I mean? And I would rather have a team with like these two teams. Like, you know, they were complete teams with a lot of skill. You know, they had some grit and some really good goaltending, some great goaltending in the Avs side. But again, looking back and looking at those rosters, man, like it was just, if you can combine these two teams, it would be almost like an all-star team. Like you look at Detroit with, you know, the Russian Five, Yzerman, you know, Cicerelli was a little older, but he was still playing well. Yeah, Paul Coffey. This team was loaded. Then you look at the Avs and you have Forsberg, Sakic, like all those, all those other guys, Patrick Waugh, like it was, there's some all-time great players. You know, you had Ozolinch as a defenseman, a young, really good offensive defenseman. Like it was, they were loaded too, man. And it was just these two teams just collided and it brought the best out of them. And it was just really great hockey to watch.
This was a lot of fun. Jose, I'm a hockey, old school hockey fan, but Jose is the bigger fan. And it was, it's fun to do this episode with you, man. It was awesome.
Yeah, this has been in the works for a little while.
Yeah.
I've been waiting and waiting and waiting. But
I could tell.
Yeah, and this, again, I love hockey, man. And it's a great sport to watch. You know, you got the NHL playoffs going now. If you're not the biggest hockey fan, just this is the best time to kind of learn and see the best of the game, you know, when it comes to the NHL playoffs. Check it out. Give it a watch, you know, and then let us know on Twitter what you think, and you know, we'll definitely get back to you on that.
So, for the one and only Vince Quinn, thank you so much for producing.
Vince.
For the Broad Street Bully himself, Jose Ruiz, I'm Jeremy Dove. Thank you guys for listening to, for the final time, we'll be saying this, In the Zone with Jeremy and Jose.
Peace.
Peace.
Good job, dude.
Dude, man, good stuff.